Hello, and welcome to the program. My name is Holly Miller, and I will be reading from the Reader's Digest here on Sight into Sound Radio. I'll begin my program today with Drama in Real Life. Rousted out of bed by strangers, a man endures a terrifying odyssey. You call that a kidnapping? By Charles Gaines, and this is from Garden and Gun. A young man, M., has just entered a bedroom of a $2 million house in Birmingham, Alabama, where an older man, E., is asleep. M., hello, sir. Why are you in my house, sir? E., half asleep. Nah, what? M., what are you doing here? E., you scared me. M., are you supposed to be here? E., yes, I live here. M., no, sir. I bought this house and everything in it 2 months ago. Who are you? E. I am Elton Stevens, and I'm renting this house. Elton B. Stevens, Jr., to be exact. He is 75 years old, 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, gray hair, blue eyes. He is 14 years retired as manager of the real estate division of EBSCO Industries, Inc., a privately held international conglomerate started by his father. Elton has been separated from his second wife for a year, and for that year he has rented the house in dispute from a friend of his, referred to hereafter as Mr. B., while his new house is being finished. I should mention that I know Elton. He has always had a Dionysian lean toward partying, fast cars, good food, and pretty ladies. He has an endearing grin, a deep South drawl, not a shred of pretense, and a sweet soul. He also has sleep apnea. Every night when he goes to bed, he pulls up an app on his phone called SnoreLab that records his snoring and breathing overnight, along with any other sounds made nearby, such as those of the nightmare he finds himself waking to this morning. E. So what now? M. You tell me. E. Buddy, you're scaring me. M. I'm not trying to scare you, bud. If I was trying to scare you, I would scare you. E. I would like to get in my car and leave, please. M. No, we gotta figure out why the heck I'm out a whole house here. E. Is this a robbery? M. Absolutely not, sir. Do I look like a robber? E. Yes. M. I do. E. No, you don't look like a robber. I didn't mean that. Can we go to the living room, please? M. Are you going to be copacetic in front of my fiancé and her kids? If you make them feel out of place, I'll hurt you. M. Picks up Elton's phone from the bedside table and puts it in his pocket, where he continues to record for another 2 hours. Elton gets out of bed in his pajamas, and they go into the living room. M. Baby, 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 say hey to Mr. Elton. T. Hey, how are you? T is Tabitha Nicole Hodges, 31, 5'5", 130 pounds. Brown hair, a severe mouth, lynx eyes, a number of traffic violations, and an arrest for unlawful manufacture of a controlled substance. With her son on a sofa are 2 children, a boy 13 and a girl 11. They all stand and nod at Elton, who says to M, "You have a nice family." M is Matthew Amos Burke, 34. 5'7", 170 pounds, brown hair, blue eyes. He has a wrestler neck, beefy tattooed arms, and a put-upon set to his features. In the past decade, he has been arrested multiple times on charges, including unlawful possession of all kinds of drugs, carrying a pistol without a permit, and trafficking methamphetamines, for the last one of which he has just completed a 3-year jail sentence and is currently out on probation. Matthew and Tabitha arrived at Mr. B's house more than 5 hours ago, at around 2 a.m. They forced open a door to let themselves in and liked what they saw. Parked outside in the driveway, were Elton's 2012 Toyota Tacoma pickup and two of the 17 luxury cars he collects, a 1971 Mercedes-Benz 280 SL and a 2012 Maserati sedan. So pleased were Matthew and Tabitha with Mr. B's home that they took the keys to the Maserati from the kitchen table, drove the 45 minutes back to their trailer in Rimlap, Alabama, woke up the two kids to show them their new car, and brought them back to the house. After their return to Mr. B's house at 7 a.m., the family admired the floor-to-ceiling windows, the artwork, the classic Triumph motorcycle on show in the living room. They also helped themselves to items belonging to Elton, a camera, some credit and debit cards from his wallet, an Italian shotgun they found in his closet, a Derringer, and a 1945 long-barrel Smith & Wesson revolver from the bedside table, 10 or 12 high-end watches from another of Elton's collections, and a Yeti cooler carrying all the loot. So what did these people think they were doing? The only possible answer is, who knows? Elton believes that someone must have told Matthew about that splendid house and the elderly renter living in it. In the living room, Elton and Matthew continue to debate whose house it is. Matthew asks how much Elton thinks the house is worth. Elton tells him $2 million or $3 million. And Matthew says, yeah, well, he paid 2 point something. He can't remember exactly for the house and everything in it, and he doesn't like getting ripped off. Elton asks if Matthew wants some money, like I would write you a check. Sounding insulted, Matthew says he doesn't want money. What he wants is his house. Look, you can take anything you want, Elton says. I don't want to take nothing. It's all mine anyway. I just don't know why this is happening to me. I mean, I would do anything for these kids and this little lady here. She's had a rough life, man, and I promise them better. I can help you out. Start talking. Well, you say you don't want any money. You don't know what I want, buddy. And it becomes increasingly clear as the conversation continues that neither does Matthew. Not exactly, anyway. Elton repeatedly asks to be allowed to put on his clothes and go to the bathroom, and is eventually permitted to do so. You wouldn't dare get a gun, would you? Matthew says. That wouldn't be safe. No, I would never do that. But what Elton does get from the bathroom is Xanax, and he swallows two of them before he comes out. They come in very handy over the next 7 hours. Back in the living room, the kids are starting to become uncomfortable, as in, maybe this is not their house. Tabitha comes up and whispers something to Matthew, who turns to Elton and says, "Sir, you just might have to take a road trip." Elton, "Do what?" When they leave the house for where he doesn't have a clue where, he and Matthew, in Matthew's black Chevrolet Tahoe, Tabitha and the kids follow them in Elton's pickup. Elton is understandably sick with fear. Matthew pulls off Highway 280, where he is forced to slow in front of a McDonald's, and Elton tries to jump out of the Tahoe. Matthew reaches over one big arm and grabs him by the shirt, tearing off some buttons, pulling Elton's face into his, a horrifyingly different Matthew than Elton had seen before. "You do that again, I will kill you and your family." As Matthew drives into the countryside, Elton tries to keep track of where they are, but there are too many turns onto back roads with no signs. Matthew finally turns onto a field with a couple of trailers and stops at the second trailer back. Behind them, Elton's Toyota. "Home, sweet home," Matthew says. The trailer is in Rimlap, population 2,624. Its name, the backward spelling of Palmer, a family who lives there. Inside the trailer, Tabitha and Matthew lead Elton into their bedroom, where an air conditioner is cranked up and bras hang from the light fixtures. The three of them sit on the unmade sheetless bed. Matthew gets down to business. "So tell me the truth now, bub. How much money can you wire into our accounts today?" And Elton does tell him the truth. $500,000. Matthew and Tabitha stare at him for a moment. Then Matthew says, "Okay, We want half of it. Fine, Elton says, but I'm cold in here. Can we go somewhere else to talk about it? You bet, Matthew says, and leads Elton through the trailer where their kids are playing a video game to a small deck facing the rear of the field without another human being in sight. The only seating on the deck is an old wheelchair, to which Matthew motions Elton, then takes his seat on a truck tire. Matthew offers Elton a joint, which Elton declines, and they discuss the best way for Elton's money to become Matthew's. After a few minutes, Tabitha joins them. She sits on a stool she has brought from the kitchen and says, "So where are we at?" Matthew tells her that Elton can call his banker and explain that he's buying a farm property from Tabitha and needs the banker to transfer the purchase price of $250,000 into her account. "Let's do it," she says. Matthew still has Elton's phone, and Tabitha tells Elton to use hers to call the banker. She gives him her account and routing number, and Elton makes the call on a speakerphone as directed. The banker tells him he will send the request to the wiring department and that someone will call Elton back in an hour or so once the transfer is completed. Here they are now, the three of them, with a deal more or less straight between them, except for one important detail. "You're going to take me home as soon as the money's in the account, right?" Elton asks, and Matthew says yes, they will take him home then. "Shake on it," Elton says, and they do just that. You're listening to the Reader's Digest on Sight Into Sound Radio. You can listen to Sight Into Sound on HD4 on 88.7 KUHF, channel 8.5 on TV, streaming on your computer or smartphone, as well as your smart speaker. You can also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at sightintosound.org. We are Sight Into Sound Radio since 1967. Would you believe Matthew? Doesn't the situation shout that no, they will not take you home, but far more practically dispose of you in some gruesome way? And wouldn't you wonder if there's anything you could do here and now to make the gruesome disposal less likely? The world as experienced by a particular animal, its distinctive perceived universe, is called that animal's Umwelt. It's hard to imagine two men with less similar Umwelts than Matthew Amos Burke and Elton B. Stevens, Jr. But I believe that while in the trailer deck, Elton sensed on some pressing primordial level that the more he could bone his Umwelt to Matthew's, the better his chances of survival. Over the next 2 hours, Elton directs the conversation into the lingua franca of the Deep South, cars, hunting, and fishing. The three of them sit there talking those subjects from a stool, a wheelchair, and a truck tire as comfortably as three hog farmers at the end of a long workday. "What are y'all gonna do with the money?" Elton asks Tabitha. She jumps off the stool, takes back her phone from Elton, and starts thumbing through her photographs. "Here," she says, "this is our dream house. Now we can buy it for us and the kids." The photo shows a white two-story, five-bedroom house near Rimlap with plenty of land for horses and cows. His old career in real estate kicked in. Elton asks what the owners are asking for it. As it happens, the figure is around $250,000. "And now," says Tabitha, "they have it." "No, no, no, no," Elton tells her. She and Matthew don't want to pay the full price or in cash. What they want to do is start with an offer of about $190,000, then put down 20% of whatever figure they get the house for in cash and mortgage the rest. Taking back Tabitha's phone, he does the mortgage and calculations for them, coming up with payments of about $700 a month. This nearly tickles the couple to death. "It's where we're going to get married," Matthew says. "And you know what? We want you to come to the wedding." "Yeah," Tabitha says. "We want you to be a pallbearer." When word finally arrives on Tabitha's phone that the $250,000 has been transferred to her bank account, she and Matthew are as happy as kids on Christmas morning. "Now you're going to take me home and not hurt me, right?" Elton says to Matthew, and Matthew says yes. On the drive back into Birmingham, Elton is more frightened than at any other time during the day. Matthew and Tabitha have the money. How can it possibly benefit them to set free the only person who knows how they got it? And it's not until they turn onto the expressway headed back toward Mr. B's house that he begins to believe that, unlikely as it seems, they might be doing exactly that. It helps that Matthew mentions, without much heat, that of course he will have to kill Elton and his family if Elton tells the police what happened to him. They arrive at Mr. B's house at around 3:45 p.m. Elton gets out of the pickup, as does Matthew.
"We're going to borrow your truck for a couple of weeks," Matthew says.
"Just keep it," Elton says, and starts to walk to the front door.
"Come here,"
Matthew says. "Come here." But Elton walks back to the pickup. Matthew hands Elton his phone. Then he gives him a hug and drives away. Fairly boiling with adrenaline, Elton lets himself into the house. He sits down on a sofa and pulls out his phone. If I were writing a fictional screenplay of the story, I would be tempted to end it with a cutaway from Elton staring at his phone to this. Lawn outside of white two-story house near Rimlap, Alabama. Day. A wedding reception is going on. White tents, caterers, a band playing, a festive wedding party of about 100 people. Angle on, the man who is paying for the reception, Elton B. Stevens, Jr., rises from a seat at a linen-draped table with champagne bottles on it to toast. Angle on the smiling newlyweds across the table from him. But this is not a movie. Elton calls his older brother. No answer. And no answer from either of his sisters. He gets into his Maserati and drives to the big house on a hill that used to be his, and now is the home of the wife from whom he is separated and their son. She is at home, and Elton tells her what happened. From her house, he also reaches one of his sisters, who, after getting off the phone with Elton, calls Ashley Curry, a retired FBI agent who had worked for the family business. He tells Elton's sister that the police and the FBI must be notified and that he will do it. But, she says, they told Elton they would kill him if you do that.
"Oh, they all say that," he says.
By mid-afternoon the following day, Matthew and Tabitha were under arrest. Using GPS tracking on Elton's phone, the Birmingham police had little trouble locating the trailer in Rimlap. When she saw the cruiser pull into the field, Tabitha grabbed up all of Elton's watches, guns, credit cards, and the like, and started frantically hiding them. But by the time the police entered the trailer, she realized she hadn't needed to do that, since the story she was busy inventing for herself would provide a reason for the stolen goods' presence. The very short version of Tabitha's long-taped statement, she worked a part-time job as a maid, she didn't, for Mr. Stevens. On one occasion, Mr. Stevens had gotten touchy and intimate with her. "He hurt me," she said, "and I wanted to hurt him back." So yesterday, she drove to the house Mr. Stevens was renting to do just that. But Matthew, who wanted no part of her revenge, had followed her and, in a three-way confrontation with Mr. Stevens, urged her to let it alone, baby. They decided they would just take their story to the police. Panicked by the prospect, Mr. Stevens had given them their credit and debit cards, guns, watches, and camera. He had given them all that, plus his truck, plus the $250,000 he had wired into her account to keep them from turning him over to the police. So, she said, Matthew didn't have nothing to do with it. In the meantime, Matthew was giving his statement to a detective named Cameron Beadle, and it was very different from Tabitha's. Matthew insisted that he and Tabitha just took an early morning cruise up to Mr. B's house to pay a visit to an old friend of Tabitha's, Mr. Stevens, who might have been her sugar daddy at one time. During their nice friendly visit, Matthew happened to mention a house they wanted to buy, but their loan application had been turned down. And Mr. Stevens said,
"You know what? I'm just going to give that house to y'all for y'all's wedding present, and I'll just transfer the money for it into y'all's account."
"So," said Detective Beadle, "you're saying there was no forced entry, no kidnapping, no theft of property,
And no extortion, correct?
Correct, Matthew said. None of that.
Mr. Stevens was just a real friendly old guy, Matthew explained, who maybe felt bad about maybe once being Tabitha's sugar daddy, and now he wanted to help them out.
Okay, Detective Beetle said. He had something he wanted Matthew to listen to. You ready?
Yeah. And Detective Beetle played for Matthew the Snorlab recording. Matthew Amos Burke is serving 17 years in a federal prison in Kentucky on charges of kidnapping, bank fraud, and conspiracy to commit bank fraud. On the same charges, Tabitha Nicole Hodges is serving 12 years in a woman's prison in Alabama. It may be difficult to wrap one's head around this crime, but Elton Stevens' attorney, Tommy Spina, who has defended every imaginable type of criminal for 45 years, summed up the crime this way. You've heard of blue-collar crime and white-collar crime. Well, this is a no-collar crime. Life in these United States. From Paula Davis. As we boarded an airplane some years back, the two women behind me were voicing their anxiety about flying. That is, until they peeked into the cockpit and got a glimpse of our pilots.
Wow, one said. They're both good-looking.
Her friend sounded relieved.
Good, she said. They have more to live for.
From Patricia Wood. During a bus tour in Canada, our guide pointed out all the points of interest. And over here, he said, indicating the golden arches of the local McDonald's, is the American Embassy. From OutsideOnline.com. Headlines we thought we'd never have to see. Stop licking toads to get high. And from HealthDigest.com, why you should think twice before getting your nose hair waxed. From Tracy Paglio. Following the funeral service for my grandmother, my family drove to the cemetery. When we arrived, my 3-year-old asked where we were. This is where we're going to bury Oma, I said gently. He let out a deep sigh.
It's sad, isn't it? I asked.
Yes, he said. I didn't bring my shovel.
From George Berrien. A greeter welcomed my friend and me when we walked into a Bass Pro Shop store. Pointing to the canes my friend and I use, I joked, we really don't need canes, we just use them to beat off the women. She shot back, and you'll need the other end of the cane to hook them. From Reddit.com. The moment I realized I wasn't as smart as I thought. When someone told me they had the same name as me, I said, really? What's your name? I was shopping for clothes when I spotted someone I recognized. We made eye contact and smiled at each other. It was just then I realized I was walking toward a full-length mirror. After this conversation with my boss, I will be in an hour late tomorrow. I have a doctor's appointment.
Is everything okay?
Yes, why do you ask? And finally, I said, I'm consistent, not just all the time. And it really had to be pointed out to me. Back to school. From Susan Weston. I asked my granddaughter how her first day of first grade went.
Well, she said, I don't know how to read yet.
From Don Godfrey. A freshman at a Catholic high school, I was attending our first Friday Mass, so naturally I sang my heart out. Suddenly the principal, Sister Matilda, appeared by my side. She leaned over and said, Mr. Godfrey, the Lord will not mind if you mouth the words. From Judy Puglisi. My 10-year-old grandson, Sam, was so excited. He had just gotten a saxophone, which he was learning to play for the school band. I watched proudly as he took the instrument out of the case, assembled it, and positioned it around his neck. He played one note, then carefully reversed the process. What's wrong? I asked. He answered, that's all I know. From Tracy Bow on X. Marriage can be difficult, but rewarding. Like this morning, I told my husband, I love you. And he looked deep into my eyes and said, do you know where my keys are? Well, that does it for our program today. I've been reading the Reader's Digest. I'm Holly Miller, and this has been a production of Sight into Sound Radio
Houston, Texas.